Hi, this is Katie Hurt, and you are listening to Music's Journey podcast with my friend Kim Sear.
But you feel like unfinished business, like a hurricane that stopped me in my tracks. You feel like unfinished business, and I can't help myself from living in flashbacks. Yeah, I sure hope there's more to this, 'cause you feel like unfinished business.
You just heard a snippet of the song Unfinished Business by UK award-winning country artist Katie Hurt. This is a special Spotlight Artist episode tonight here on Music's Journey.
Hi!
How are you, Katie?
I'm good, how are you?
Good. Oh, I love your accent. Well, you're from the same, well, I'm not going to say you're living in the same place that I'm from, so got some special memories for me there.
Whereabouts are you from?
I'm from Norwich.
Norwich. Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah, that's where my family's from. I am so excited to have you on the show.
I'm so excited to be a part of it. Thanks for having me.
I have listened to some of your music last night, and I am just, it's incredible listening to your voice. You've got such a beautiful vibrato. And your tone and your range is crazy.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. That's so kind.
Well, I'm sure you've heard that before. I'm sure you've been compared to Dolly Parton because you definitely sound like her.
Thank you. I love her.
Oh, I'm telling you. It's just incredible when you hear a voice like yours come up. And it's just such a special treat because so many of us look to her. And it doesn't matter what age group. It doesn't matter whether or not it's new audiences that are listening to this. It doesn't matter the generation. It's just a beautiful journey to watch what she's done in her career. And just to listen to your voice.
Absolutely.
Just to listen to your voice reminds me of when she first came out and started singing.
Oh, well, that's a wonderful compliment. Thank you so much.
Well, you definitely are a treasure. Now, talk to us about your history, because I know you grew up in a little town called Northport, and that was in Long Island in New York, before you moved to England. Tell us about that.
Yes, so I was born in London in England. My parents moved for work when I was still just a couple months old, and we lived in Northport until I was about, I would say, 7 or 8. So all my first memories are there. I remember going to like kindergarten and all that kind of stuff. And then we moved back to London, and my parents found a little house in a tiny village called Windlesham. Mm.
Which so pretty
not
there.
Many people have
Oh, it's
have
so
heard
pretty
of,
there.
Yeah, it's in the, so it's about an hour outside of London in the kind of countryside. And that's pretty much where I grew up ever since. But we went back and forth to the States quite a lot, and I've been traveling, doing music and traveling since I was about 14, so definitely managed to see quite a lot of the UK and been lucky enough to play in some other really cool places too.
Oh boy, have you ever. You started singing really young. I think you were like 4 years old when you started?
That's what my parents tell me. apparently... some friends of ours in Northport owned a kids' clothing shop, and the story that I heard growing up was that when I was about 4, I went in with my mom and heard a song on the radio that I obviously liked and demanded that everybody pay attention while I sang the song. So I think it's just been what I've done my entire life, for sure.
So it's something that you knew, like at a very young age, something that you loved to perform.
Yes, for sure. I definitely wanted attention.
But to have the music bug is different though, right? You know, to be able to know that that's kind of what you love to do, and especially the writing, because you're an incredible writer too.
Thank you. Well, yeah, I mean, my parents, I would say they kind of planned it. They played me like Patsy Cline and Dolly Parton and Jim Reeves records as lullabies when I was a baby. Mm-hmm. And it was all we listened to when I was a kid. That and Elvis's country records was just always on in the house. So country music was kind of a no-brainer for me. That was just, immediately what I grew up thinking great music was. And then, yeah, when I got slightly older, I was about 13, I got given a day in a recording studio as a birthday present. And it was like you go in and you pick a cover song and you sing along, you get a little disc with your name on it. And I remember going in and it just being the greatest day and just being like, I this is what I want to do.
Hmm. It's amazing when you can feel it in your bones and when you're comfortable in your own skin. And to be able to know that at that age is pretty special.
Yeah, I'm very lucky that I found what I love so early on.
Now, take us from there, because how you got into it, because I know 2018 is when you had released certain music, but tell us before that. Take us through that original journey for you.
So I started writing, I would say, when I was around 10, but kind of seriously started writing when I was more like 15, 16, and I started releasing singles, and I put out an EP very early on, which was recorded in a friend's, like, they had an end of the garden shed recording studio. Mm-hmm. And I knew I wanted to be a songwriter. I knew I wanted to be a singer. All my favorite artists had been songwriters and performers. And then when I finished school, I couldn't decide what I wanted to do if I went to university. I was torn between two subjects. So I decided, instead of having a gap year and taking a year out completely, I would do a music course at a different college. And it was a 6-month course, and I went along, and it was for songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And I met so many wonderful people. And then a week after I finished the course, I signed my first publishing deal.
Wow.
And that pretty much sealed my fate. I was like, well, I guess I'm not going to university. I guess I'm going to do this now. And I met the wonderful people in my band about 2 weeks after that. I was playing a show, and I was the opening act. And after the show, a gentleman knocked me on the shoulder and said, hey, I'm your new drummer, come and meet the rest of your band. And he literally introduced me to the rest of my band. And
It's
been my band ever since. It's been about 5 years now.
And that's Gabe that I see you in the videos with. Is he
part
of the band?
Yeah, so Gab is...
Oh, Gab, sorry.
Gab is my co-writer on everything that I've released in the past couple of years, Unfinished Business, Pieces of Me, and my upcoming album. He is also the guitarist in my band, and it's pretty cool because we met that week at that show, and about a week later we wrote, I think, 4 songs in one sitting, and we were like, okay, clearly this is a good thing. We've been doing it ever since.
It's amazing when you find that comfort when you're sitting in a writing session, because you didn't, like you said, you didn't have a lot of experience. Most artists here and anybody that's done any kind of record deal normally sits in writing sessions for a couple of years and learning how to write and write and write and, you know, just honing your craft and being able to understand the kind of music that you want to release. But you've just got such a natural ability to be able to navigate a song, but to bring that story to life. And that is very special. And you can sing, girl.
Oh, thank you. Well, I definitely spent a lot of years writing by myself and trying to emulate the songs that I loved. It wasn't until I met Gab that I kind of figured out what it was like when you write with someone else, and especially when that person has, I guess, a different level of musical ability, because I had always approached songs from the lyric side of things, from the story side of things. Working with someone who was creating from the actual, like, riffs and from the music and the melody, that was really interesting for me. So that opened up a whole new world, which allowed me to experiment more with the singing. So I was very grateful for that experience, and obviously it's been working so far.
Mm-hmm. Was he from the country genre as well, or?
I think he actually is mainly, blues rock guitarist, but had been working in country with some other artists for about a year before I met him, and then I convinced him it was the greatest genre.
When you're looking at rock and you're looking at blues, they all kind of lend themselves into country to begin with. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's probably really given that versatility for you, because, you know, that's when you're bringing into the different tones that I've been listening to. You know, when it comes to your singing.
Yeah, especially country nowadays,
mm-hmm.
because it has so many influences. It takes on, you know, it doesn't all sound like the stuff that that came out in the 50s and the 60s. So there's so many, you know, there's people like Shania Twain and Brothers Osborne and bands that pick up on all different elements of kind of rock and blues and soul. And I've had a lot of fun trying to figure out where I fit in that and how can I include all of those elements in my music.
I think you're going to evolve and evolve and evolve when you get to sit down with other writers and other producers that'll sit with you and pull different things out of you, because they're going to hear stuff in your voice that you're not even aware that you're capable of. And there's just
I hope so.
There's so many I can think of right now that I just, oh man, you'd just be, they would have so much fun with you. they have worked with some incredible artists here in Canada, and every single time, you know, it's just a beautiful match. And every artist will say the same thing. They'll come back and say, I didn't even know I was capable of doing that. And what the way that they wrote the song originally doesn't even come out like that. And they see something so incredible when they see the final product.
Yeah, well, that's the fun part as well, is just when other people get involved, because they have such a different appreciation for music. So you get this kind of mixing pot of all the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to your writing, do you write from a very personal place?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, sometimes we'll start writing and we'll kind of think that we're writing a fun song with a made-up story, but I think there's always a part of it that ends up drawing on either my own experience or stories I've heard or things I've kind of internalized throughout the years. I think it's hard not to do that,
mm-hmm.
Especially with my album that's coming out soon. That was definitely something where it was like my stories, or the stories that the life I've experienced over the past kind of 5 years of being a musician. It's hard to avoid putting that into songs. So it definitely does play a big impact on the songs I make.
I think that's why, you know, when you're navigating, when I'm listening to it, you know that you're living and breathing every single word. Like, you can just see it in your facial expressions. You can see it just in every single word that you sing. You know that it's coming from your whole being.
I'm really glad it comes out that way, because it's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, when you have an authentic singer-songwriter who knows exactly who they are, and as I said, it's always going to evolve, you know, as you go, because your life changes. But when you're writing from that place, when you're writing from that personal spot in your life, a snippet of your life, then those are the ones that connect with everyone.
Yeah. Well, it's been interesting because during lockdown, everybody kept saying, oh, I bet you must have so much time to write. But I found actually the opposite happened, because I wasn't out there doing things. I wasn't living. I was just at home all the time. I didn't have anything to write about. I didn't have any kind of new experiences to draw on. And you can only write so many songs about being in lockdown before you kind of run out of ideas. So I definitely think that you have to be living to have things to talk about.
And you're right, because a lot of the artists, most of the artists anyway, that I interview all have had a very hard time writing. And they haven't found that inspiration or that connection, you know, to even come up with anything. And, you know, that's just a part of, I think, that creativity that stops for you, because you're not one-on-one, you know, that connection with somebody. And you're not having that experience. And it makes a huge difference not having connection, human connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've got such power in your voice. I was talking about that earlier, and you deliver such a gorgeous rasp, and you've just got that perfect mix, and you just know how to put
Thank you.
Range to it at the right time. That is just something that you're not born with. It's just something that you know, takes time, but you know how to listen to music right. And that takes, you know, that's a special gift. That is just something that, you know, as you're growing up and you're listening to music, you're listening to it in a way that's different from a lot of fans out there. You know, you're listening to it from a writer's point of view. And it's just...
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, very special. Very, very special. I am really glad Janelle got a hold of me.
Yeah, me too.
Very, very glad that she did, because I am so excited about this whole journey for you.
Thank you so much. Well, when it comes to singing, it was, I mean, Patsy Cline was my first, I guess, true love.
Mine too.
And and then Dolly, and then it kind of spiraled from there. But the thing I love about them the most, and the reason why I guess those country songs kind of stuck, was because for me it was the way that they told a story.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I sing, even if it's me that I'm characterizing, I want to be almost acting out the story through the way I sing it. That's kind of the way I approach things. It's mm-hmm. like I'm telling the story with my voice. I'm in the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
That it's almost like I did a lot of school plays when I was a kid, and I was like in all the musicals and stuff, and I think that really helped me kind of approach it from, I guess, like a musical theater perspective. It was like, okay,
maybe,
well, how
that's
do I,
the expressions how do I, that I've seen,
yeah,
you know, when you're singing. Mm-hmm.
It was like, how can I convince people that this is real and that this is what I mean in the song? So I'm really glad it comes across.
It does. It definitely does. What have your parents thought and your family when they see the songs that you've been writing? You know, there's just so many special moments, I'm sure, for them.
Yeah. I mean, they're incredibly supportive. My mom was the one that drove me around to shows from the age of about 13 until I was old enough to drive myself. And they've both just been wonderful. I have to not let them be in the front row, though, because my mom has a tendency to cry.
Oh, no.
And then that sets me off. So I can't look at them when I'm performing. I have to send them away.
Oh, no.
Which is very... I'm like, you can either be backstage where I can't see you, or you can be hidden in the crowd, but you can't sit front row and cry, because then I'll cry and then it'll be a mess.
Oh, proud
but
mama.
But no, they're really wonderful. And my dad is so funny, because he'll text me before every show and be like, have you written your set list yet? Do you need me to write the set list for you? Do you need help? And I'm like, I'm good. But he just always wants to make sure I play the songs that he likes the most.
Aww. You know, when they're looking at it, they're looking at the journey that they were on and the music that they loved, and they're seeing you carry on that tradition. And, you know, you're just so steeped in traditional music, but at the same time, you just got that beautiful modern, I don't know, you bring something pretty special.
Oh, thank you. You're making me blush.
Well, when you wanted to play full time, that's not easy. Mm-hmm. And like, I know that the new song, we're going to get into that after, but when you're looking at taking that leap to go into the music industry full time, it's a big deal. It's hard when you're an independent artist and being able to get on the radio and be able to be recognized and be significant, because so many artists are coming from that place, I need to write the next hit song. I don't get that feeling with you, and I'm hoping that I'm right, because I think that you're a lot more grounded than that, and being able to look at it and say, you know what, I'm going to write from my heart, and that's what you're doing, is for the love of music and for the love of writing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely can't approach songwriting from a let's write a hit, or let, you know, the terms that get thrown around now, like let's write a banger or let's write a bop. That's never the way I start writing. I always, you know, it usually starts will be in sound check, and the boys will be messing around with a riff just to warm up, and then a song will form backstage, or I'll hear a conversation and have to write it down and take it to Gab, and we'll try and create the rest of the story that would be around that conversation. It never really starts from a perspective of, is this going to be a hit record?
Mm-hmm.
My whole goal in life has always been that I love singing and I love songwriting and storytelling, and I wanted to be able to make a living from that. And it wasn't ever, you know, the glitz and the glamour, you know, it's always nice, and I'm a girly girl. I'd love to be able to buy as many shoes as possible. But
don't we all?
If I could be in a van touring and playing new places and seeing new things and writing songs and be able to make a living from that, that would just be enough. And mm-hmm. I think when it comes to music, I guess I'm kind of just old school in that way. I love albums because it means that you get the chance to tell more of a story. You can link songs together. And artists like Taylor Swift really inspired that kind of thing. It's kind of like a whole era of music, which I really like. So I definitely wanted to approach it from more of a, okay, with each song, what mm-hmm. does it mean? What's going to connect to it? That was kind of the way that kind of all fell into place.
Well, that's pretty special, because I don't know if I can ask too many people you know, including a lot of the artists, you know, whether or not they, what was the last album they ever listened to from front to back?
Oh, I'm definitely an album person.
Me too. If I'm going to do any kind of interview, like I like to listen to everything. I like to see the different stages. You get a real good feel of somebody when you listen to it from front to back.
Yeah. And I think one of the other reasons I've always loved albums is, well, with at least with my music, because I'm a country singer. I have an accent when I sing. Can't get rid of it. But
I don't
it's
hear
funny
it.
Because when,
I don't hear it.
Well, this is the thing. Some people don't, but then other people say things like, oh, you sound like Dolly Parton. And of course, she has an accent when she sings.
Mm-hmm.
And here in the UK, everybody thinks I'm making up a country accent, but it's just the voice I had when I was a kid growing up in the States. So it was just how I spoke.
Well, look at Keith Urban. Keith Urban,
yeah,
he's
exactly.
got a very, you know, thick accent, but yet when he's singing, we don't hear it. So.
No, and I think most people sing with an American accent anyway, just because it's softer.
Maybe. Yeah.
If you tried to, like, you know, with an English accent, we say words like dance or grass, mm-hmm. and you can't really sing that very well. You can't, you know, if Leanne Womack had said, I hope you dance, it would have sounded really weird. So I think you have to do that to some extent because that's kind of how modern music works.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely strange. But I like that albums give you the ability to have like one country song or one that's slightly rockier, one that's sad, one that's happy. You get the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
If people were only going to listen to one song of mine, they might think I was too rocky or they might think I was to country because they're not getting the whole picture.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why I loved so much when I was listening to Revived and then I was listening to your new single and then I was going back and listening to a couple others and went, no, I'm not just playing one, I'm playing four because it is so beautiful to sit there and listen to the different types of music and what you can bring to a lyric. And what you can bring to that song with your voice and those stories. It's just really, really amazing. So that's why I wanted to showcase a little bit more for you tonight.
Thanks.
It's important, as we said. It's just being able to see that beauty and not just one song, because there's more to you. That's just one song, right?
Yeah. It's one of the frustrating things about the streaming culture of music, because it does lean more towards having like singles come out back to back as opposed to a whole album. I think it's been interesting trying to find a balance for that with my music, especially
I can imagine.
As an independent artist.
Yeah, and plus because you're playing in two different countries right now, and plus look what your single's doing in Australia. You're really being able to learn. You know, there's silver lining, and then there's, you know, the pros and the cons, you know, when it comes to the live streaming for sure. But I think anybody that's going to listen, you know, to a single, at least from my point of view, I always look back at other songs that I might like, you know, from that artist. And
yeah.
The streaming platforms allows people to be able to look down when they're going to Spotify or Amazon, or, you know, they're able to see some of the other songs that you've written and performed. So I think it's just an opportunity too for you to be able to get to other countries and for us to be able to listen where we never would
yeah,
have been able
absolutely.
To do that
I mean,
before
I'm,
you know
I'm so incredibly grateful to be making music in the era that I'm making music in because of the advantages of technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating sometimes when you hear stories about bands who could sell records and immediately, you know, have enough money to buy a house, but on the other hand, it does mean that I get really cool phone calls now where I hear people are playing the song in Tasmania, and that just would never happen in a different generation. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely has its pros.
I know that it's difficult too when being independent. You're putting an awful lot of money into your career, and when it comes to record labels today, it's turnkey for them, and for you it is your 80% when it comes to writing and everything that you're doing, and you're living and breathing every second of that and what it takes for you to go out just on a radio tour to promote a single.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and what it takes for you to get into a studio, how much that costs. It's just insane. And people think
yeah.
that, oh, you know what, you're with the record company or management and all these other things, but that's not it. You know, that comes from you. And that might be a project, is how they look at that. You've got a project with this label, or you have a project with this management. And, you know, there's so many different facets that fans don't understand that artists go through. And, you know, it's not all that glitz and glam. You got to build the fans one at a time, and it's a grind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's what you understand. It's not about just getting on the radio. It's just you understand that. And the loyalty will come with those fans. It might be hard right now when you look at it, especially this last year and a half. It's been crazy. But
yeah, the last year and a half, I'm just kind of pretending they didn't happen.
It's not easy.
Too frustrating to even begin thinking about. But I made the decision a couple years ago that we would never say no to a gig.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody came to us with an offer for a show, and for 2 years we did that. And I think in 2019 we ended up playing 155 shows. And
wow,
that was crazy. I mean, on the one hand, I was like, it's not enough. I need to be doing more. You know, there's more days in the year. But on the other hand, when 2020 happened and we had all this time off all of a sudden, I hadn't realized just how exhausting that was.
Yeah. It takes its toll. It takes its toll.
Yeah, I definitely needed the rest and I didn't know I did.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, I'm quite grateful because now I'm going into this album kind of with Sounds Good in the Bar being the first single, and I'm kind of like, I think, ready for it now.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've had some time off, and I definitely think doing all of those shows was super valuable in terms of, like you said, like gaining fans one at a time.
Because
you know, some of them would be really great shows, but others there would just be five people in the room, and you have to play shows like that to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So
you do.
The live
performance. I think I've heard this like so many times throughout my career. But I think the one thing that you'll always hear, it's one thing to release a record on radio. It's one thing to be sitting in a studio. It's your live performances is what keeps the fans.
Mm.
And learning how to perform and being able to deliver those songs where people are going to remember. Is, you know, it's like records, it's when you're hearing it on the radio, there's just so much talent, such a huge pool of artists that are coming in from all different countries. And people come and listen, and then, you know what, oh, then it's on to the new one. It's the live performances that they remember. And that practice is invaluable.
That's kind of what Sounds Good in a Bar was picking up on.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think if you can make someone's night, or if you can make them feel something, you can make a person cry or laugh and dance, then you've had you've had an effect on someone. They're more likely to, I guess, be a fan and follow you and support you. And that's always what I wanted, was to be able to go out each night and tell stories to people that moved them in one way or another.
I'm hoping one day, and I'm going to manifest this one. I know it's going to happen. I just know it will. That you're going to meet Dolly Parton and you're going to meet Taylor Swift.
Thank you very much.
And I think that day comes, you know, they're going to see the talent in you as a songwriter.
I hope somebody has a camera. Because I'm pretty certain if I met Dolly Parton, I'd pass out. Like, I don't think I'd know what to do with myself.
You know, it's just one of those moments where you go, what do I say? What do I do?
Yeah.
What do I ask her?
I would need to meet her twice, once to have like the mental breakdown, and then once to meet her like a genuine person, I think.
I bet.
But yeah, I mean, I really hope that happens one day, because she is definitely my idol.
Oh, she would be so thrilled to hear your voice. And she's just such a support for so many artists coming up. She would be so thrilled, you know, to hear your beautiful voice.
Now, thank you.
There's one song that I was listening to last night. I'm just not sure if I know how to pronounce it properly. It was pretty special to me. Natchez? Is that what it is?
Natchez, yes. So Natchez is a little town in Mississippi. And it's an interesting song because we were opening for Mac McAnally at a venue in London called The Borderline.
Mm-hmm.
And we had played our set, and he had gone on, and I was super excited to hear him play. And the band were standing next to me, and I turned around, and they were all gone. And I thought they'd gone off to do something cool without me, so I went to look for them. And I found them all in the dressing room, and they were just messing around with the guitars. And Gab was playing that slide riff that's in Natchez.
Mm.
And we ended up missing the entire show. We sat in that green room, we wrote the whole song. And it wasn't until afterwards, and I'd use the word Natchez because it was a town name that I'd heard of and it rhymed. That was it. Like, I didn't have any connection to the town. But afterwards, we looked it up. We thought we should probably look it up because we've, you know, named a song after it. It turns out Natchez is famous for a great fire.
Oh, wow.
And the first line of that song is, "Somewhere down in Natchez, I'll be striking matches."
Hmm.
So that felt a little bit kind of...
meant to be.
Yeah, weird and meant to be. And I do have, like, when I tell the story about that song when we play, I do say I didn't have anything to do with the fire. Well, it wasn't me, but
you're
yeah,
on
that's,
fire singing this one. You are on fire singing this one. I had to play this back probably 10 times.
And I could it's my dad's favorite song too.
I'm telling you, I could still listen to it and listen to it. I'll never get sick of that one. Just watching the video and listening to you sing, it's just beautiful. Here is Natchez by country artist Katie Hurt here on Music's Journey.
Somewhere down in Natchez, I'll be striking matches and lighting up every single letter you send my way. Somewhere up in Boston, you'll be getting lost and found in all of the things I used to say. There are moments when I regret leaving. There are moments when you wish I would come back. It's what I gotta do. It's what you're putting me through. I wasn't living a life, I was just living a lie. In every backstage room, in every late night bar, I cover my face, but will I ever hide these scars that I let you put on my heart? I let myself love you too much until it hurt. I couldn't tell where you ended and I began. And I was always good at leaving, but bad at saying goodbye. So I just thought that you should know why I ran. There are moments when I wish I was there. There are moments when you're sure glad I ain't. It's what I gotta do. It's what you're putting me through. I wasn't living a life, I was just living a lie. In every backstage room, in every late night, I cover my face, but will I ever hide these scars that I let you put on my heart? What you put me through. I wasn't living a life, I was just living a lie. In every backstage room, in every night bar, I cover my face, but will I ever hide these scars that I let you put? Oh, that I let you put. Oh, that you let me put. Oh, that I let me put on my
That is not just the incredible Katie Hurt. I am so thrilled. I've been introduced to this amazing, amazing, talented girl. It is such a special song. I know that this one's going to be played over by so many of you, and I hope that you add it to your playlist because this one is such a gem. And this one's going to stand the test of time. It's just such a special one. And I hope that you know there's just something so magical with this song. And gosh, I'm telling you, beautiful, so captivating. Well,
oh, thank
done,
you so much.
Katie. Well done.
Thank you.
You make people cry on that one. Just the way you deliver that, the way you deliver the lyrics is just such a gorgeous story. Just beautiful.
That was my plan. I just want to make people cry with sad country songs.
Lord, no wonder your mom's got to sit. You're going to stick her in the corner way at the back where you can see her.
I know.
You know, her listening to that. Oh, man, it's going to make her so proud. I'd be a proud mom. I'm telling you, that's for sure. Oh, gosh. Now, you've been playing some special shows. 2019, you were performing, as you said, 150 shows, and then you've had some special moments. Tell us what it was like to be able to play and perform for the British Country Music Awards.
That was pretty cool. Very special. Yeah, we definitely had some highlight moments in 2019. We played a whole bunch of different festivals. Like the Isle of Wight and Country to Country, which were just kind of, I guess, bucket list moments for me. And, yeah, the British Country Music Awards and the UK Country Music Awards as well. It's just always, especially with the award stuff, it's always really nice to be recognized by I guess, your peers.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the fans, but also just your friends, because we all play music, you know, we're all in the same scene and we see each other and we support each other. It's nice when, you know, other people who make it also like it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always really cool. But yeah, we definitely had a whole bunch of very special shows on that that year.
Do you remember what it was like when you got the phone call that you were going to be performing on any of them? Because those are some pretty big bucket lists.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always... Well, the thing is, the first time I get, like, the call for anything exciting, I always double-check it's actually real, because I don't want to get my hopes up. Like, I feel like I get too excited too easily, so
nobody would, nobody would prank you like that. There's no way.
Well, not even just a prank, but sometimes I worry, you know, like, things will get cancelled or, you know.
True. That's true.
They're just... So, yeah, I always have to, like, double-check, and then I, you know, call the band and get very excited on the phone with them.
I love to be there in those moments, you know, when somebody gets the call in. It's just like so special. Now, when you performed
absolutely.
On that stage and you're gaining all that momentum and, you know, you're coming to, you know, special awards that you've been given, you know, in the last little while, it had to have been so hard because you're getting that momentum and all of a sudden pandemic hits.
Yeah. Well, I guess the last year kind of obviously hit everybody by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely been difficult going back into doing shows this year because the shows we had that we've been doing this year were the ones that were rescheduled, some of the ones that were rescheduled or postponed and have been rescheduled and postponed like three or four times now. So they're definitely, and there's definitely a lot of people who still aren't coming back to shows yet and people are still being super cautious. The rules are different. You need to have, you know, tests beforehand. So it's not quite the same as it was before. And from a momentum perspective, especially being an independent artist and knowing how difficult it is to have singles out and to pay for PR and to start getting, you know, noticed in towns and cities and then nobody hears from you for like a year and a half is really difficult.
It's hard because you've got bandmates too. And, you know, everybody's involved and you just got that momentum for the marketing team. You have all these ideas. And then, you know, this is just something in our generation we never would have seen. Our parents would have, or our grandparents, but nothing like this. And it's just been so difficult for a lot of people to navigate around. But the one thing that, you know, is the silver lining is just that people need music. They heal with music.
Well, I think the one thing that kept, like, a lot of my friends got part-time jobs during, you know, during the last year. I was working. I've had part-time jobs on and off my entire life because music doesn't always pay enough. But I worked the first half of the first 3 or 4 months of the pandemic, I was actually working in a pharmacy, helping to deliver drugs to people that couldn't leave the house or that were shielding but needed medication. Mm-hmm. And then I stopped and I took some time off for the rest of the last year. But I definitely think it's been just something none of us could have predicted and totally bizarre. But I think it's also something we went through together. And the one thing that kind of kept me going was that people are always going to want to listen to music and mm-hmm. I'm always going to want to make it. So mm-hmm. it wasn't like it was never coming back. It was just a matter of when. So I just had to learn how to have some patience.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just something that we all gravitate to. There's just certain types of music that we like. And, you know, we always remember exactly where we were, whether it was good or bad. And, you know, it could be a good memory, it could be a bad memory, but we always know when we listen to a song, we always attach that moment to something that we were listening to. It's a part of our lives. It always will be. Music's what gets us through. And it's just something it's just tough, you know, for the bands out there, you know, to be able to lose those gigs and raising their family, you know, you count on that wage coming in. It's been a tough one for so many reasons. And same thing for me. You know, for me, I need that. You know, when you guys are out on the road and touring, that's when the interviews are there. And so it's tough, you know, to be able to reinvent everything and to do stuff differently. But we've all had to change and do that. But the one thing that we just all love is just that music you guys keep on bringing. And thank God for that.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Now you have... go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I definitely think that's true. We all just need music.
Mm-hmm. It's healing to the soul. That's why you write the way you do, and you write from your experiences, right?
Yeah.
Now, you've got so much to celebrate your career right now, and the fans don't know. A lot of people may not know this because of your deal that you've just signed, and that's with Johnson Talent Management. Tell us about that.
Well, that's very exciting. I was connected to Jeremy through my producer, Murray, who worked on Unfinished Business and on my album.
Doc Walker.
Yes, and he was in Doc Walker and Crash Test Dummies, and he is just a legend.
Mm-hmm.
We got connected and we started talking, and a couple months ago we decided to start working together, and it's just been wonderful ever since.
How did you meet Murray Pulver? How did all that come about?
How did Murray? Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that you've heard of the Bros Landreth.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah. So I can't even remember how we discovered them. I think Gab just found them online one day. And we became immediately obsessed with their first album, Let It Lie.
Mm.
Just had it on repeat in the car on the way to shows, just nonstop listening to that record. And then we were in a time where we were like, okay, we need to record some music. We need to go into a studio and actually record this as a studio EP rather than just a live recording.
Mm-hmm.
So we wrote a list of our top 10 favorite producers of all time. Just
nice.
Just like out of curiosity, we were like, let's just write a list. And it was people that had produced for Shania or for Miranda Lambert, or from Gab's perspective, there was loads of other people on there too. One of the names we put down was Murray's because he produced that record.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to find an email address for everybody on the list. We got 3 replies, which was
awesome.
two of them were from Nashville producers.
That's amazing.
One of which said, it's great, but I don't have time to record anything. The other one said, it's great, but you have to use my band. He said, I'll record all the musicians and you can just come and do the vocal. And I was like, oh, that's not really how I'd want to make a record. And the third was Murray, and he actually responded first. He was the first person to reply, and he got in touch and was like, oh my God, you guys know about me in England. This is cool. let's
Sounds
have
like
a Skype chat. And we jumped on Skype and we spoke for about 3 hours. And by the end of the phone call, we had already booked our flights. We were like, we absolutely want to work with you. He understood it. And I think he put it into words. He was like, so you want an EP that sounds like if Leanne Womack was singing with the Eagles?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yes.
Yes.
That's what I want. And I think the one thing that I loved about the way that he does music is that it's very much the traditional way that you would make music, in the sense that it's a band all playing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do record in different rooms, but you're still playing together. So you're still getting the feeling and the emotion of the room, rather than it being so clinical and, you know, mm-hmm. people doing it at home or one at a time. I wanted to be in the room with the musicians when we recorded, and I wanted to be very hands-on, and he was the only person who wanted to do that. So
nice.
Yeah, that's how Murray kind of came into the picture.
Wow.
I fangirled really hard and then it happened.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm just like the fact that you guys did that and got the response is just, you know, it gives so many people hope out there, a lot of younger artists out there too that are trying to do the same thing and just trying to get noticed and just get into the right room. And you guys believed enough in yourself. You knew what you had. You know what your gift
yeah.
is. And, you know, the same thing with your band. And that's just an amazing story. I'm glad you shared that. That's so cool.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just think, especially when it came to that, it was kind of like, let's just do it. What, you know, let's just, if we're going to spend our own money to record this EP, and we're going to spend our own money to release it, we might as well make something with someone that we love. And
nice.
And do it the way we would want to do it, because if it is the only thing we do, at least then we'll have had a great experience. And I think that was kind of the mindset that went into that. So
very cool story. Now
I'm glad it paid off.
Tell us about Jeremy again and how that came in. Next,
so I guess just through Murray we just kind of got connected, and I was very lucky in before meeting Jeremy, but after meeting Murray I received some funding from Manitoba Film and Music.
Nice.
Because I had been doing all of my recording in Winnipeg and using Winnipeg musicians and Winnipeg studios. So I got some funding from them to come back to do my album. So they helped me. And in the process, I kind of got introduced to Jeremy, and we started chatting on a regular basis. And then, yeah, a couple months ago, decided we were going to work together, and it's been wonderful.
That's so nice, because I know they're both amazing people, Janelle and Jeremy, and everything that they do over there. And they've done such a fantastic job, but they really care about the artists. They really do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been wonderful for me, because not only do they care and they're obviously just awesome people, but I've never had a manager before, and we've been doing this. I've been doing it myself with Gab's help, with the band's help, but mainly doing it myself now for like 5 years. So having someone else who is also going out and chasing it down
mm-hmm.
and coming up with exciting news and helping with things has just been such a relief for me, because it's like, okay, well, maybe I don't have to do as many emails. Maybe I can spend a little bit more time writing songs, which is what I'd like to get back to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And leaving the social media end of it to you guys, right? Because I know that's a big deal, you know, when it comes to all that. Mm-hmm. I know it's tough. I know it's really tough to wear all the hats, and, you know, to have a team like that behind you that believes in you, and they see every aspect of an artist and really work with them. So, you know what, you've done well, girl, really well.
Thank you.
Now, when it comes to country music, a lot of people may not know. They don't think that the UK has much in country music, but it's quite the understatement, isn't it?
It's so funny, because when I first started, when I was like 13, it was a very small scene. Mm-hmm. The UK has always loved country music, but we are about a decade behind. because it's just, I guess, because country music is a lifestyle of music.
True.
You know, it's based around, you know, working people's lifestyle, and it's very different in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there are people who love it, and of course they love all the big ticket names. It's just a kind of delayed reaction, because it's not our number one type of music. It's not on the radio very often over here.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past 5 to 10 years, I have been, I guess, really lucky to be able to watch it grow and watch it change. And there are so many country festivals now, and there are so many new opportunities. There's loads more artists. We have this thing called C2C, which happens at the O2 Arena in London.
Oh, yes, yes.
Where they do a 3-day festival, and they bring over, like, Miranda Lambert, Casey Musgraves, and Darius Rucker, and then each night has four artists on, and it's a huge thing. But what's really cool is they have pop-up stages outside the arena where British artists can play.
Nice.
So I've been lucky enough to do that and to watch that grow from it, when it first started, to now where it's this huge deal. And we have two or three radio stations now, which is really cool. So yeah, it's definitely a blossoming scene. I definitely think that people shouldn't underestimate it.
When it comes to the music for country music, you have the same thing no matter where you are, whether you're in the States, whether you're here, you know, Australia or any of the countries. It's just you have people that are used to rock and roll music, or, you know, they're listening to all these different genres that have evolved and have different aspects of the other genres in it. And they'll look at country music, it's just about drinking, it's just about this, and, you know, it's about a truck, and that's all you hear.
Yeah.
And that's the perception.
The bane of my life.
But when they get introduced to it, and I know my son was a tough one to crack, because he knows how much I love R&B, and I was a rock girl for sure, but, you know, R&B music, and just so many different genres that I liked. I loved pop as well, but just certain pockets of music we used to listen to all the time. And he kept saying, oh man, when I started doing the interviews, I was just doing so many country artists and so many country shows. And he would give me a hard time. And he would just say, I'm never going to listen to, don't play it around me. Don't play. He is only country music now.
One.
See, there you go. It changes, because once people get to listen to the music, and they get to listen to the different types of music that are coming into country today, like pop country, and you got rock, you got rap artists that are doing country now, that are on it's records, and
it's everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's so funny, because I cannot even begin to tell you how many times people have said, or I've had to have, like, not arguments, but at least like decent conversations with people to try and explain to them what country music is. And, you know, if I introduce myself by saying I'm a country artist, sometimes here in the UK, the perception is, oh, so like Dolly and Tammy Wynette.
Mm-hmm.
And although I love them, and it's like, okay, cool, the comparison is great. On the other hand, I'm like, no, because the music that they're referring to is mm-hmm. 40 or 50 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
And much like every other genre, country music has evolved too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting, actually, because during lockdown, I did a live stream every single week. And we started a second live stream series called Honky Tonk Hump Days.
Oh, I didn't know that. See, I'm learning. I haven't seen that one. Okay.
Oh, well, if you have the time, you can go back and check it out. It's still on Facebook. But every other Wednesday, we did this thing called Honky Tonk Hump Days. And we started in the 1900s. And we went by decade through to about the 50s or 60s. And just had a look at, like, who were the original country superstars, and what, like, how did this genre evolve? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, because Willie Nelson was told he wasn't country enough, and so was Johnny Cash, and so was Patsy Cline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been, the statement has been, you're not country enough, since literally day one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really fascinating learning about how the genre came to be, and how it took elements of Western swing and elements of gospel and bluegrass, and it became its own thing. So we kind of studied it, and I think after studying that throughout lockdown, I definitely have a much deeper understanding now of what I think country music is. But it definitely always makes me frustrated when people do have that opinion of it nowadays, and they still think that it has to be a song about a dog and a train.
I'm telling you, there's the country fans are the most dedicated fans ever. I'm telling
100%.
You, they
yeah.
will stay you with get, you till. Yeah. Yeah, right to the very end.
When you get a good country fan, they're going to be a fan for life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I think, what's also super special about the country music scene. Especially
watch
here
it.
In the UK, because the UK scene is smaller, the fans here are really dedicated.
Mm-hmm. I was watching Ed Sheeran on The Voice, and how much he's just gravitating to a lot of the country artists and starting to work with them. And it's just, it's such a special moment to see, because he's one of my favorite writers and one of my favorite singers.
Well, he recorded his first album, and I didn't know this at the time, but he recorded his first album in a studio that was in one of the houses on the next road over from mine,
no way.
Where I grew up. Yeah.
Wow.
And I got the chance to go there actually within a year of him releasing that album. And they had a Lego house he built while he was recording the record.
Wow. Neat.
Which is really cool.
You have to take pictures for me and send it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I would fangirl. That would just be terrible for me. Just, not a good look. It would not be. Anyway, let's talk about one of the other songs that I want to get to, and that's Unfinished Business. That one is so moving, too. It's just such a really important song for you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Unfinished Business has I love all my songs, but Unfinished Business does have a very special place in my heart. It is probably the most, up until Sounds Good in the Bar, I'd say the most honest that any of my songs have ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Gab and I had a room which we set up to do all the demos and stuff. We called it the My Place Studio. And we were sat in there one day, and I had just recently lost a family member. My granny had passed away. And I was talking about how it never feels like there's enough time.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also happened to be falling in love at the very same time, and in the opposite end of the spectrum, it's like, okay, well, I want more time with this person. And so we kind of combined the two things, and Unfinished Business was brought it. The song basically wrote itself. I feel like I think it was kind of one of those moments where the song kind of comes to you instead of the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't quite even understand how we did it. So, yeah, I have it means a lot to me, but the crazy thing about that song is that we play it every single night when we play a show, and we pretty much always do it as the last song.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have a moment where I speak to the crowd, and it kind of changed its meaning for me, because the more shows we played, the more I realized that, again, subconsciously had written about music in the song.
Mm-hmm.
Every night we play, we meet new people, and I go on stage, and then I say to them that they're my unfinished business. I hope we can see them again, because it's so true, because all I want to do is be able to come back and play more shows and see people again. And
mm-hmm.
the song kind of took on this meaning of it being about the fans, which has been really special to witness.
Mm-hmm. Special, special song that would hit people in so many different situations. And it's the one that I listened to, I think, first, before I listened to any of the others. Like, I had heard the new song, and I knew for sure that I definitely wanted to do the interview. And then I listened to the song, and it's just like everything just kind of peeled away, and you're starting to unravel what you're capable of. And then I went to the first song that I'd played already in the show, and it's just, oh gosh, I'm telling you, just goosebumps. Just the hair stood up on the back of my neck and on my arms went, yeah, she is special. This is just an incredible, incredible song. I love this song.
Oh, thank you. I'm really glad to hear that. It's definitely a special song, and I love all the wonderful things it's brought me as an artist. So I'm very grateful for this song.
Well, we're hoping for all of our international fans out there that fan base is going to grow so much more for you right now. Here is Unfinished Business by country artist Katie Hurt here on Music's Journey.
Second drawer in my desk, to the right of my bed, is a letter that I started. Halfway down the page, all the ink spilled again. Guess those secrets remain guarded. There's a book on a nightstand, I'm 10 pages in. The spine's already been broken. Yeah, the ending's unknown, but it's written in stone. So I ain't losing sleep. Yes, I can live with all those things being incomplete. But you feel like unfinished business, like a hurricane that stopped me in my tracks. You feel like unfinished business, and I can't help myself from living in flashbacks. Yeah, I sure hope there's because I still don't know the lyrics. So I make up the words and it might sound absurd, but I'm my only critic. And it's tragic to think that the moment I blink, this picture will lose focus. And it scares me to death that there's love on my back, but you won't even notice. Yeah, would you even notice? You feel like unfinished business, like a hurricane that stopped me in my tracks. From living in flashbacks. Yeah, I sure hope there's more to this, 'cause you feel like unfinished business. There's a dream that I had and it's making me mad that we lay down the foundation. Yeah, it ain't got no walls and it started out small. Just want it all.
I told you that was Unfinished Business by my very special guest, country artist Katie Hurt. I'm telling you, she's going to be out your way. I'm telling you, she's going to hit Australia. She's going to be on Canadian soil here, and she's going to be singing in the festivals. Something so special about this girl. So thank you so much for writing this beautiful song.
Oh, thank you for playing it.
What is your dream ultimate collaboration?
My ultimate collaboration?
Mm-hmm.
Dolly Parton.
I figured it would be.
You know, I do have like a list of artists I would love to collaborate with. I'm actually super lucky because one of them is on my album.
Can you
but
hint?
I'm not going to say who just yet.
Oh, come
yet.
On. You can.
I will say they're Canadian.
Nice. Male or female?
Which is pretty cool. A male.
Okay.
Dan Davis. But I'm very excited about that. But Dolly Parton, I just think singing with her.
She switched that conversation real quick.
I had to. Otherwise, you're going to make me give it away.
Oh, come on. Do
no,
a girl a favor. Throw
yet.
Me a bone, would you? Come on.
I definitely would love to do more. More duets and collaborations, because it's always really fun singing with people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see it happening. There's two people that, well, there's three. Because Aaron Pritchett, I'd love to see you with JoJo Mason, too. Would be so cool. But Clayton Bellamy and Dan Davidson, Dream Rights.
Those would all be awesome. I would love to do that. I hope that they hear this and DM me on
Instagram.
Don't worry.
I'll be putting a bug in their ear. Don't you worry.
Okay.
I will definitely be doing that, without a doubt. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I know what Clayton would do, and I know what Dan Davidson would do, and he's just got such both of them have just the capability of being able to write stuff that you just, they've got so much going on up there. I just want to be in their brain just for 5 minutes. Just for five.
Yeah.
Just
I feel that about a lot of different writers.
Mm-hmm. Just to hang out there. Just let me sit and hang out. I'll sit in the back and just, you know, just listen to everything that's going
Curious
on up there.
Curious to know what goes on up there.
That's right. Murray helped you with Unfinished too, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah, so Murray recorded the whole Unfinished Business EP.
Mm-hmm.
That was basically the song that took us to Canada.
Nice.
So we wrote Unfinished Business and we were like, okay, we need to record this, but we need to do it justice.
Mm-hmm.
Then we did the Unfinished Business EP and we flew out to Winnipeg for the first time to work with Murray, and now we're here.
When you wrote that song, did you imagine it coming out the way that it did?
No. I had no idea what to expect. At the time, I had put out one EP and it was all of live music.
Mm.
So it had just been recorded in one go. I had no idea what to expect. It definitely exceeded my expectations. You know, it took me to new places. You know, we went to Canada and the song itself has now been played in so many different countries, at so many different festivals. I've been able to witness, like, one festival we played it because of this song. We won a slot to play and we watched 9,000 people waving torches to this song, and that will literally be my favorite moment. Until the day at which I become an Opry member, I think that'll be my favorite memory.
I can't wait for that day. I cannot wait for that day. You hear me? I can't wait for that day because it's going to happen.
Me neither.
It's going to happen. You and I are going to have to stay in touch.
Absolutely.
And I'm gonna watch this whole journey of yours and be on this journey here with you, because I know that's where you're going to end up, without a doubt.
Thank you.
Without a doubt.
Well, I hope so.
Now talk about your brand new single. Tell us all about this one.
So Sounds Good in a Bar. It is the first single from my debut album, which is very, very exciting. So this song is a true story. It is honestly my life in a song. I was working as a waitress and, you know, we were doing gigs on the weekends, but I needed money. So I was working as a waitress and I'd had a really bad day. And I wrote the first verse to this literally like on a napkin or on my notepad in the car. And I drove straight to Gad's house and I was like, we need to write a song. And we wrote most of it. We took it out to Canada and we finished it with Murray. And he was like, you need to have a sing-along part. If you're going to have a song that sounds good in Dubai, you need it to be able to sing along to it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so right. And we took some creative license in like the second verse, and I kind of drew on some stories from friends that they told me and other creatives. But this song was kind of about the fact that, you know, we all have these big dreams, and I would obviously more than anything want to be playing stadiums and going on world tours, but my goal at the end of the day has always been to be able to make a living from music. And to be able to hear people singing the songs back, because it's just such a wonderful feeling. And so we kind of just put that in a song. As a songwriter, we make the best of our messes and we turn them into songs, and we can make up stories and then we just play them and hope that they sound good in a bar. And yeah, I'm very excited for this song to be out.
It is so cool. This song is really, really good. I love the strip back to this, being able to really let those lyrics come out front. And it just drives home that story so much more. And it's just such a really cool song. There was another artist that I just interviewed recently. I'm trying to think. Devin Cooper. And, you know, he wrote a song that just really brought tears to my eyes. It was about these bar stools, about a barkeep looking at the bar stools. And the stories got told there. And about a priest who comes in and couldn't understand why the barkeep would serve these people, you know, all these drinks, and, you know, thinking that it was just such a bad thing. And then he ended up being peeling away those layers and being one of those people that sit on those stools in that confessional. And then he ended up, you know, looking at things so much differently, you know, in that moment. And it reminds me very similar to what this story would entail for a lot of people. And
that's so cool. I definitely need to check that out.
Oh, it's such a good song. You're gonna love it. It's his latest single too, one of his latest singles. And Devin, awesome. Devin did a great job in writing that one. But it reminds me of just what this song could do for people, especially at this time right now.
Yeah.
And everything people are going
through.
Well,
especially after people have been so like away from music for so long, and all they want to do is go to a bar and have a drink and sing along to a song, I think.
This is it.
this song kind of gives people the excuse to sing along.
It does. And it's just the other version of what Devin did. You're taking it on the other side of it and being able to give that feel-good feeling. And being able to, yes, to be able to connect with something that is just, you know what, we need it. We need it. And we need our friends. We need that socialization. We need to be able just to sing out loud. And some people that they only do it in their cars, they only do it, you know, privately in their shower or whatever. But, you know, people just love to be able to sing. It doesn't matter whether you got a voice or don't have a voice. They just love to sing.
Yeah, well, I know that feeling.
You can sing. There's a difference. People might run the other direction if I was singing. Everybody keeps telling me I don't
I'm sure they wouldn't.
Everybody says they don't have a bad voice, but I don't know. Now, you shot the video for this. Now, tell us about that.
Yeah, so I was super lucky to work with an incredible director called Ryan Say on both the Revved Up and the Natchez video.
Mm-hmm.
And I just knew that I wanted to work with him again. And I had recently played a show, and I have previously played shows at this venue called the Sound Lounge in London. And it's run by artists. It's a bar that is, it's a bar and a venue that is actually run by fellow musicians. So I messaged them and said, hey, look, I have this idea for a song. Do you mind if I come in after you guys close one night and film a video? And they happened to be closing early on a Monday so that I could have it for about 4 hours. So we went down and we basically, I mean, we had a rough idea of the story, but we pretty much planned the video while we were sat in the venue once we had an idea of the space.
Mm-hmm.
Gab didn't know he was going to be in it until the day. we kind of surprised him. We were like, oh, by the way, you need to be a drunk.
Oh, no.
So that was pretty fun. But yeah, so we filmed the whole thing in about 4 hours, and I used my actual apron and my actual notepad from when I was a waitress.
Nice.
at the cafe where the song was inspired. And we had the wonderful Sarah Brixton came to do my hair and makeup. It's the first time I've ever worked with a makeup artist, and it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
She was amazing. And yeah, it just kind of all came together. So I'm really glad, because I think it was super cathartic to be able to tell that story and to kind of show the dream aspect of that song.
Full circle.
Kind
of, full circle.
Yeah, very full circle to be able to kind of put it on paper in a song and then to be able to visualize it and share it with other people.
I can't wait. Cannot wait to hear the rest of this EP.
I will make sure to send it to you.
Please. I want to hear it. It's just something that, you know, like I'll be doing an article anyway as well, writing that for Now in That magazine for you. But it's just nice to be able to put that whole body of music. It's just so exciting. When I've just got that bug, you know, I've got that Katie Hurt bug where it's just, I got to listen to the rest of it. I need it now.
I'll send you over a couple of the tracks from the album so you can have a sneaky listen.
Yay. I would love that. Absolutely love that. Now, when is the album coming out? Have you got an idea?
I don't know yet. We have a plan for a couple more singles, and then the album will be coming out, I hope, by the end of next year.
Okay.
It was supposed to come out last year, but with everything that happened, not that it would have been wasted, but I wanted to be able to tour. I didn't want to put an album out and not be able to play any shows to support it and to be able to kind of actually play it live. So we have Sounds Good as the first single. The next single is going to be coming out very early next year, and then maybe one or two more, and then the album. So hopefully it won't be too much longer of a wait.
Well, you promise you're going to come back on the show when you go to release the next one?
I absolutely promise.
Okay, good. Yes. I look forward to that. Do you have time to do a couple burning questions?
Of course.
Okay. Fire some off. I'll be harder on you next time. when it comes to the burning questions. These are ones I'm just going to be fairly easy. If you could spend a day with an artist past or present, who would it be and why? Any genre.
Any genre?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, that's a tough question. John Mayer, because I think it would be, interesting to see what he does in any given day.
Absolutely. Okay, so favorite stage moment? I think you've already said that, but what's your favorite
stage moment? Favorite stage moment was Tilton Party in 2018. We opened for Liam Gallagher, and it was the largest crowd I've ever played to. It was 9,000 people.
Nice. Okay, so favorite country singer on the radio today?
Oh, my goodness. On the radio today? Does Leanne Womack count? She's kind of, she's still on the radio.
Oh, yes,
right?
She is. Yes, she is.
Leanne Womack. And if not, Aubrey Sellers.
Gosh.
I think she has an amazing voice.
Very much so. Good choices. Very good choices.
Thank you.
Okay, so if you could travel anywhere in the world and experience the culture, where would that be and why?
That's a tricky one. Italy? I love Italian food.
Me too.
I love the weather over there. So it'd be pretty fun to go over there and experience that.
I know. It's too hot over there a lot of the time. It's way too hot. Okay. But it's beautiful. Like, I should have been born Italian, not English. That's what I used to say, because I love Italian food. I cook Italian food. I still have my traditional
English. Yeah, I mean, definitely have pasta for every meal if I was allowed.
So do they still do the bread butter pudding over there with the currants in it? And do they do
in the UK?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, I haven't had it in a very, very long time, but it's still a thing.
Yeah, my mom used to cook that for me when I was a kid all the time. It just used to be one of those ones that she would always do. If she wanted to cheer everybody up, it was just something that was easy for all of us kids, because there was a lot of us, right? So it's just something that she used to cook. What's your favorite comfort food?
Mac and cheese.
Gosh, you and I are in the same skin right now, I swear. Okay. Favorite series to watch during the pandemic?
Oh my God. That's a hard question. Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, you're a Grey's girl. Okay.
Or NCIS. I don't know.
No, it's good. Is there any limited series that you liked? Anything that you liked on, let me see, Yellowstone?
That's I love Yellowstone.
Isn't it good?
Yeah. I'm a big TV fan. I love, like, any cop show. I've probably seen it.
Nice.
And the thing is, like, I love the stories, and they're really cheesy, but they're easy to watch, and I always find inspiration in them. And big fan of anything like that.
Do you see, like, Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, or any of those? Okay.
Yeah, I watch all of them. I haven't started Chicago Justice yet. That's the only one
I haven't seen that. Ooh.
But I've watched all of PD, Fire, and Med.
Very cool. You and I will have to send texts back and forth when we're watching Yellowstone. That's one we're going to have to do when we're watching that one together. That's a really, really good one. I can't wait for that. Okay, so favorite thing to do when you are together with your girlfriends?
With my girlfriends? Mm-hmm. I don't actually live anywhere near my friends. One of my best friends lives in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And my other best friend lives about 3.5 hours away from me now. So we Skype all the time. The one thing that we did used to love to do was, like, face masks.
Oh, nice. You know, do you still do that? Just, like, have your wine in the Zoom?
Yeah. Order a pizza, drink some wine, put on a face mask.
What is your favorite pizza?
What is my favorite pizza?
Mm-hmm.
Just a classic margarita.
Ooh. Well, that's not a classic out here.
Well, just cheese and tomato. Like,
that's it. Okay. That's it.
Put some mozzarella and tomato sauce, and I'm happy. I don't need any other toppings.
Nice. Okay. Best, most useless talent.
Most useless talent. Oh, my God. What can I do? I mean, it's pretty useless. I can bend my thumb back to my wrist.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I'm double jointed.
Okay. Nice.
That has no practical purpose.
I'm challenging everybody, all the artists I talk to, you know, to go onto TikTok and show us your useless talent.
Okay. I'll do my best. I'm not really a TikToker.
I know.
I've tried.
I'm not either, but you know what? It's just eventually we all have to evolve, right?
So, that's very true.
I'm just waiting for some of the people.
I did learn my first TikTok dance a couple weeks ago.
Oh, did you?
I'm trying.
I was going to say, because who was I talking to? Oh, gosh. It was a duo, country duo. And the one guy can't dance at all. Cannot dance, can't hold a rhythm, nothing. And we said, okay, we need to watch that painstaking dance on TikTok. And he has not done it yet. I'm going to hunt him down.
You should definitely get him to do it.
I'll make him do it when I go to interview. So he won't know that because, you know, when I go to do a live interview with him, I'm going to make him do it on the spot. So we'll see what happens.
Lucky guy.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Do you got some shows coming up? Anything?
I do. I have a show tomorrow.
Oh.
I'm playing in Bath.
Oh, nice.
So that should be really fun. Mm-hmm. And then I'm playing in Birmingham on Sunday. And then I have two shows next week, one in Essex and one in Kent. So,
nice.
Yeah, a couple more left this year.
Have you got anything booked for the festivals for 2022?
I have a couple booked here in the UK. I'm hoping that I'll be able to come over and do some shows in Canada. So
wouldn't that be great for Calgary Stampede?
Yeah. Oh, that's on my bucket list.
There's nothing like a Calgary Stampede audience. I'm telling you, that audience is something special. Yeah.
I'll do my best to get on it.
Oh, they would just love it. You get up to the mic and just listening to you just, yeah. They would love it. Absolutely love it. Okay, so thank you so much for coming on the show. Keep me in touch, and I'll wait for those songs. I cannot wait. Just want a sneak peek just to be able to hear you sing.
Yes, I will send them
over. Anything.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. It's just, I just knew that there was going to be a kinship there. I knew that when I listened to your music. So congratulations, and thank you so much for sharing your beautiful gift with us all.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you take care, and you take care of that voice of yours. And we look forward to those beautiful stories that you're going to be telling in your music.
Aw.
Hugs, girl.
Yeah, right back at you.
Okay, you take care of yourself, okay? And we'll talk to you really soon.
You too. I'll talk to you soon. I hope you feel better as well.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. A great big thank you for Katie Hurt for coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed my interview with her. She is just such a sweetheart. You can catch my show every Tuesday evening from 7 until 9. You can also catch all the interviews for your favorite artists on musicsjourney.com. Don't forget to check out all the articles that are written, all the latest videos, the new releases, and reviews with the interviews with all the artists that I interview here on the show at nowandthenmagazine.com. I've got some pretty exciting shows coming up for you that I don't think you're going to want to miss. I've got Sean Jones, Jamie Warren, Cross Parallel, rock band FKB, Annika, Molly Annell. Kay is going to be back. She's got a very special brand new single that she's got coming out right now. And Lemon Cash, David Boy James, Taria, Alex Hughes, and so many more. Some exciting shows that I cannot wait to bring to you, so it's going to be so much fun. Well, that's it for me, your host, Kim Sear. It has been a pleasure to be a part of your day today, and thank you for tuning into Music's Journey. You have yourselves a wonderful night. I will catch you next time here on Music's Journey.
Waiting tables, counting small change in a jar, writing tall tales on a napkin in the car. Poet, and I know it, and I may not be a star. Taking failures and finding ways to make them sound cool, drinking too much and always acting like a fool, falling down, it sure ain't. But it sounds good in a song. listening into every stranger's conversation, sabotaging all my own relationships.